Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com. You're probably already there. Let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song with his wife, Sarah, that you just heard. He's going to sing his version of the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio, and Vilmos works on JackieCation.com, the website. There are many ways to support the show. The Amazon link is one. You can use an Amazon link from JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com to go to Amazon. You order like normal, and it supports the show. There is a straight-up donation button, PayPal or Venmo, to this email address that is mine, Jackie@JackieCation.com, where you can just donate to the show if you like the show a lot. I think PayPal has figured out a way to do a monthly. If you want to go monthly, please do. Other ways to support the show if you want to is you can buy merch. There's Dork Forest t-shirts, and all the shirts are union made here in America, so they run a little big. Union Bayside, so if you want to look up their size chart. And then the other merch is my stand-up merch. On JackieCation.com, you can watch me do stand-up, you can look at my schedule, and the stand-up merch, a couple of different t-shirts, couple of different enamel pins, and all of my CDs and my DVD. If you want to live stream my DVD, it's over there at comedyfilmnerds.com. They have a live streaming capability, or you can get a hard copy of the DVD on my website. Oh, there are premium episodes at Bandcamp. TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com has probably 10 episodes that were done live. They cost me a couple of bucks to make, so I charge you a couple of bucks. If you've run out of regular episodes, go over to TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com and get some more. Other than that, I say this, let's get into the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in the living room. Kat Burdick, welcome to the program.
Oh, that's so nice to be here. Thank you.
Yay! We're doing it. It's the Dork Forest. Kat Burdick, stand-up comic. You will know Kat Burdick, of course, from KatBurdick.com. KatBurdick .com. And it's at Dr. Kat Burdick on Twitter and just regular at Kat Burdick on Instagram.
Yep.
So those are the places you can follow Kat Burdick. And we're here to talk about the wild world of the next generation. Star Trek, the next generation.
The right generation.
The correct generation?
The correct generation.
Your favorite of all the Star Trek titles?
Yeah, I'm definitely a next generation girl.
All right. I love the idea that this is the one. Did you grow up with this
one? Yeah, it's that thing of like it was...
formative years.
It was hot during the formative years. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a line somewhere in like 30 Rock where Tina Fey said something about like, Love Boat was hot when she was 13, so she's got some weird sex things about Gopher.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's kind of like it. Like, it's just like, in
Geordi.
I was formed. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, right. I loved Star Trek The Next Generation. It was the first real one. You know, it was the first one back, obviously, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember when I heard it was coming out, and I wasn't like hugely into the original Star Trek, but my parents did watch it.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal to them, so... So I was very skeptical. I was like, ugh, it was my first lesson in,
right,
you can think whatever the hell you want, and then a thing will actually, you can actually watch it and see what you really think.
Right.
So I was like, you can't follow up Star Trek with some bullshit spinoff, right? You can swear on this, right?
Yeah.
And you know,
begun.
And it came out, and it was pretty terrible while. I have listened to you on Treks in the City because you got a terrible episode. You got Code of Honor.
Oh, I got the worst episode
you got
ever.
The worst episode. It's so bad. It's beyond cringeworthy. It's like
it's
someone needs taken out a shot.
Right, right. Like literally, if they could just get rid of it, it would be great.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely one of these get like buried in the vault.
But we didn't know any better. We were just like,
sort of. I mean, I feel like that's one of the reasons Gates McFadden got let go for second season is because she had objected to a lot of that kind of stuff.
Was she the
security guard? She was the redheaded doctor who there's suddenly Dr. Pulaski in the second season.
Oh, yeah.
And she had complained about a bunch of sexism and a bunch of racism, and a number of people in the cast had done it. But you can't fire Kunta Kinte for complaining about racism.
Right.
But you can ex the lady who's up in your grill.
But weird enough, Worf was not in Code of Honor.
Because he was like, no, right. I'm going to take a sick day.
I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but Kunta Kinte, Levon, he was in it, had nothing to do with the, and he was probably like, well, this is employing at least 30 black actors, I guess.
Right. Exactly. We're paying some rent, for Christ's sake. At least there's some back, you know, some backdoor operations.
But it was terrible.
Here, but it's the worst.
And it was, when it first came out, when did it come out? 94?
It was like 87.
87?
Yeah. Like 87, I think, is when they made the pilot. And I don't know exactly when, like, it dropped, but I remember, like, in, by the time we hit sixth grade, I was pretty heavily into it, and I think I was 89.
Okay, so and I know that it was VCR times. That's what I know.
And we didn't have a VCR yet at that time. We got one a couple of years later, at which point I built my library of Maxell tapes. Carefully, just
beautifully curated.
Beautifully curated. You should have seen the labels, Jackie. With small synopses, as if I didn't know.
Oh.
It had the episode titles. It had the numbers. It had the air date, both original and the date I had taped it. I had learned to pause it during the commercials to cut the commercials out.
Oh, that. See, right? I was going to ask you about the commercials.
I went full AV geek.
Well, because Andy has a good friend who's been on the program, Robert Hurt. He's an astrophysicist, works at JPL now, and he loves the ships. And he, all spaceships of all science fiction shows. And he edited out. He bought like a tape to tape and edited out the commercials. You just paused it and then resumed.
Like,
right?
Yeah, and resumed. Like, it was my, like,
that was,
you know,
your task.
My just like jury rigged way of editing it out, because I didn't. This was like the first
thing 12.
That spurred me to be an AV geek,
right?
Because it got me to the goal I wanted, right? Which was just pure Freebase and Trek. None of that bullshit where you have to like tell me about a local insurance agent. I don't care. Show me Riker or whatever. You know, I just need to see it. Although now, when I do see, like, I don't have those old tapes, which we'll get to, but I'm sad when I have old tapes that I have cut the commercials out of, because I like the commercials now are amazing.
Now, like, they might have been them. Funny.
Yeah, exactly. When you go back,
right,
or shocking. Right.
Yes.
You would have been like, oh my God, that's such a blast from that. I forgot about the Noid, you know, right. Or whatever. So it's,
right.
I didn't realize at the time that would be part of a yearbook of my life, but
right. Cause at the time you were just being an AV geek and you're like, we're going to make this sciencey.
Yeah.
We're going to science up
right.
the science fiction.
Science it up.
So had you done any other sort of, were you reading any science fiction, or was this,
I was a big reader. I mean, I definitely identify with the whole spooky reading girl concept in a big way. I was a military brat, so we moved all the time. So that was like a guaranteed friend.
Yeah.
It was like,
I never read science fiction until college.
I wasn't big into science fiction specifically, but I was into any books I could find on a nearby shelf. My grandpa had some, like, he had an anthology of science fiction stories, and so I'd
read some of those?
But I had mostly read, like, all the, you know, the Laura Ingalls books. I read all the Anna Green Gables. Anything that was a long series, I was
really
into.
Right, you were into it. But because Star Trek was my introduction to science fiction.
Yeah, and I think it is a good, like, soft intro.
Oh, it's awesome.
Because even now, I haven't gotten well into some of the best science fiction that's out there, like Octavia Butler and stuff like that. Like,
right.
I mean, it is...
There's
like
some
the Hilton Hotel science fiction, because it is such a like hey, you know, like we're just on a peaceful mission, chill out. Like,
well, I mean, there's Star Trek, and which I got was introduced to with the original Star Trek, and then Star Wars.
Yeah,
and those were the only science fiction I remember. A lot of other people were doing 2001. Mm-hmm. There was some Planet of the Apes happening, but
my dad was very into Planet of the Apes.
I couldn't. It terrified me because I didn't get it, and but I was like, I knew that it was. I was a child, anyway. So, but let's talk about Star Trek, because you'd like.
I like the Star Trek.
It
is deep. That's the thing. I was like, oh, Dork Forest, there's so many dorkdoms. I love people's dorkdoms in general. I love that your dorkdom is dorkdoms.
Right.
People get into it. And there's so many that I'll listen to and be like, oh, yeah, the Muppets. You know, Like, I've got a lot of things that have been a big piece of what I am now.
Right.
But I feel like Star Trek Next Generation is kind of spidered into almost all of them. So that's the core.
Right.
Like, Star Trek Next Generation I mean, the first part for me was like, oh, who's that? That's LeVar Burton. That's the guy from Reading Rainbow. And that's what pulled me into it.
Okay.
Because I was like, all right, books.
Yeah, yeah.
I love this guy. I love his whole deal. Why are they hiding his eyeballs? Why is he wearing a banana clip? I need questions answered. You know, so I'd watch a banana clip. Oh, it was an 80s hairdo thing. Remember the visor that Geordi wore across his eyes? What was made initially, the first kind of cheapy one in the first season, was made from a banana clip, which is a hair clip. That has, like, it was supposed to be worn this way, and you opened it up, like a sideways mouth, I guess, if you're listening.
Like Jaws.
Like Jaws, but sideways, and it was like you opened it up, and you put all your hair back into this terrible, like, long ponytail that stuck out of your head. And the 80s was so horrible that it just mixes in. But that's what the prop guy found and had put over his eyes. Although it also, if you look at old pictures of African Bambaataa, he's got...
Who's African Bambaataa?
Africa Bambaataa is the guy who, one of the first guys who started rap.
In New York?
In New York. Okay. And he had worn these weird, like, narrow, cool guy sunglass visor.
Right,
that kind of looked like that. And so they combined that with a banana clip, and then they got Geordi's visor.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
I did not know the history of the visor.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The fact that he brought it from, because when you said banana clip, I was like, that's that hair claw thing.
Yeah.
And, so he just turned it on its... Did he break it up at all or kind of shave
like
up?
He like painted two gold dots on the side and like painted the bars gold. In fact, I made a number of Star Trek outfits and props during my formative years. And one of them was I did make a Geordi visor out of a banana clip I had already owned and put it on my friend Josh.
Sure.
I made a parody of the Next Generation previews for next week. You know, at the end of the show, they'd be like, and next week on Star Trek, the Next Generation. And they'd show you like, oh, and this is going to happen. And what's going to go with this? And a guy would say a lot of kind of rhetorical questions.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
What's going on with Riker's pants? You know,
right.
And they'll show you a clip of something, some terrible tragedy. So I had forced all of my computer club friends and my neighbors who were a group of four boys raised by a single dad. So they were always kind of free.
Right. They had some free time.
They had a couple. Yeah, they had some minutes to kill. And they were also big Star Trek fans. So I forced a number of them to do my bidding to film this parody of the next week's preview. And it was like...
And they were all the characters.
And so they were all the characters. And so my friend Jeremy, who was kind of a tubby guy, he was Riker. And our joke was that somebody had sabotaged his replicator so that it made all of his food super high calorie. So it's a shot of him in front of a bunch of empty plates, like leaning back going, oh no. And then his eyes go real wide. And then it cuts to a shot of the ship exploding that I clipped out of an episode. So, and then just a lot of dumb stuff.
Yeah,
my friend,
you remember when you were 11 and you had all the time?
Right,
all the
time. Oh, but to do that, I needed a video camera. And we had nothing of the type.
Right.
I was born to teenagers, so.
Right.
It was always behind the curve on whatever was being owned by the rest of the neighborhood. But I knew that Rent-A-Center would rent out those, right? But you had to have a credit card and be a grown-up.
Right.
So I saved up babysitting money for a month, and we convinced those boys' dad to rent. I'd give him the cash, and he'd rent the camcorder so I could use it for the weekend. And to have the free time.
This is the best Rent-A-Center story ever.
Right? It's the only good one.
The only good one.
We
rented a couch, and then they repossessed it.
And then we owed $4,000.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden we had a Kirby vacuum. And so
I was terrified that I would like break it and then owe like all, you know,
all
just,
the money.
Just be given to Rent-A-Center as a slave now. But to get the free time to do it, I had to like wash the dishes and like suck it up for like a month while my mom was like, do you want to do your movie? You know,
right.
Like, oh, right. You know, it's one of those. But yeah,
that's good times.
It's ridiculous. The intensity of what I put into that. And also it was on the Star Trek collection of tapes that I described, which I took with me to leave for college. I'd been kicked out of my parents' house. So I was like on my own at 17.
Sure.
And I had my prized possessions was my big dog, a box of just crap, and then a box of my Star Trek collection.
You'll show them.
Yeah,
you're gonna see the world.
I'm gonna see exactly
you and the dog.
Me and a 130-pound husky. It's gonna work out great.
You went to college?
Yeah, and I.
They kicked you out of school to go to college.
Well,
they kicked you out of the house to go to college.
Yeah, they for a lot of reasons. They had a lot going on. But
unpack this. Did they help you get into college?
No.
So you got yourself into college.
Yeah, I got myself, once they kicked me out, I had,
are you
I
an only
worked,
child?
No, I have a little sister.
A younger sister. Okay.
Although, I'm complicated, but at the time she was my younger brother.
Okay.
So there's, so I had gotten kicked out, but I had had jobs and volunteer positions and had gotten good grades and I kept all my papers.
Yeah.
So I got myself declared independent so I could get my own student loans.
Right.
And go to college, but it was,
My sister did that.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was insane that I pulled it off. Now I don't know if I could plan. Now I don't know if I have the confidence. No, but at the time, I was like, the world is my oyster.
The world is your oyster. And someone has to do this. And right. Clearly, the adults in this situation will
not
be doing it.
Are not taking care of the job.
Yes.
Right.
My brother and my sister, I have five older siblings. And the two just older me looked at the three oldest and were like, oh, clearly no one is in charge.
Yeah.
So my brother Russ was like, I'm going to college. I'm going to figure it out. You people do whatever you want.
Right.
My sister was like, yeah, I'm going to college. I don't know what you're doing, but it's all happening. So by the time it got to me, those two were like, you're going to college. To me. So I didn't have to do shit. And at that point, they were both like, I'm going to fill out your paperwork. You're going to make sure you're doing this.
Right. And write this essay. I'll see you on Thursday.
Exactly. And I'll find you housing. And my sister had filled out all the paperwork and then realized that my father was still claiming her on his taxes. So she said, you have to refile.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, good
well,
for
no,
her.
I'm not going to refile.
And she goes, you will refile.
Or I will call the IRS and
I will
tell
narc
them
on you.
Yeah, I'll
and
narc
tell,
on you.
And tell you that it's happening because I otherwise I don't get enough money for school.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, fine, I'll refile. So he refiled. And then when I went to college, he also put me, and I was like, you have to refile. And he goes, I'm not going to refile. And I said, then you have to come up with $1,200 this year. And he goes, all right, I'll come up with $1,200. But it was always that sort of, all right, I'll do the right thing if you insist. What a piece of shit sometimes my dad was. And
he was
anyway,
a salesman, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit sometimes. Is what the real problem.
The core.
the real issue. Oh, and yeah. Anyway.
Well, I went, so when I was leaving for college, I went to a college in Illinois and I had lived in Virginia. So when I was leaving, I left my box of tapes with my friend who lived with a couple of her roommates, and one of them sold the tapes for drug money. Sold the tapes so he could do drugs.
Looking back on
the
that.
The least nerdy, like for me at the time, it would have been, it was like the ultimate betrayal. I didn't do so many drugs to get these tapes. And now you're just going to cash them in to get what, like
just
a bag
cash
of weed?
Them in for one bag
right,
of weed.
Right, I don't know.
And
so somewhere they're out there, but what's even crazier to me is like I've since bought DVDs. I have the episodes.
Right.
But I don't have that parody video, which both I want and also want to know is destroyed because there are a lot of white kids in blackface technically in that video because my friend Josh, who was playing LeVar Burton, was not black. So,
holy fuck.
Yeah, because at the time, it was 1989, and I was just like, oh, well, like, it's space. So, you know, it doesn't, like, I didn't know about, like, it was the year I was finding out about blackface, basically.
Well, and here's the thing about finding out about blackface as a young white child yeah. is I was just talking to a friend of mine, and he said, I said, you know, you have to know that blackface is racist and it's the worst thing. And he looked at me and said, who would have taught me that? And he grew up in Mississippi.
Right.
And I said, your parents? And he goes, you've met my parents. No. They're loving, interesting people, right. But they are not woke.
Right.
They are not even interested in being awakened.
Yeah.
And I was like, your siblings? And he goes, he literally got mad at me. He was like, think for a moment. Who taught you? And I said, the two siblings,
right, the internet.
All of my, no.
Oh, yeah.
All of my siblings were full of justice and full of, what the hell is happening?
Right.
And even my stepmother, who accidentally one time went to a dance in 1967. She went to a Catholic dance. After a Catholic dance, she went to a party that was mixed with white people and black people. And she was like, I couldn't tell my mom I was going, but I really wanted to go dance with all these people. And we went. And it was after a Malcolm X speech. Mm-hmm. So she got to see the end of a Malcolm X speech.
Oh, awesome.
Right. I was like, what? And she goes, I know.
Right.
What are the odds? Right. So she was, my stepmother, enormously liberal right. and enormously just sort of aware, like self-aware of her own privilege and without completely unwilling to fill out any sort of college applications, but more than willing to go, no.
Right.
No, well, to blackface. So there was blackface in your parody.
Well, and that was the year, like, I also, this is so embarrassing, because I was also a huge Whoopi Goldberg fan.
Is he a governor?
He's not a governor now. Like, I'm not exactly sure where those boys are, but that was the same, it was sixth grade, and we got assigned to do assignments for Black History Month, which was like one of the first years that they had celebrated it in Virginia in the South.
Okay.
And our teacher was very into it. She's like, "Oh, this is great. And you could pick a black person of note, and you will do this essay about them, but you write it in the first person, and you'll get up on stage. We'll have this little pageant, and you'll get up on stage, and you'll do
you'll speak as them.
And she said, "You know, you can bring props and you can dress up." And I was a bit of an overachiever and very into Whoopi Goldberg because of Jumping Jack Flash, which has gotten me into computers.
I fucking love Jumping Jack Flash.
It's the best, right? Like, and the
it is such a craptastic.
It's so
movie.
Terrible, but it's so
a
good.
Terribly wonderful.
It's got that
film.
Guy who's not John Cleese. He's the guy you call when you don't have the money for John Cleese.
I don't even know that guy's name. Right. Me neither. I was just like, he was so incidental to the whole thing.
Right, but like the chase scene, the whole thing.
Her talking
doing the Diana Ross bit with
talking to that to the doorman. She's like, "Do you see the look in my face?" And the guy goes, "Yeah, my wife has that.
The same look."
Yeah, right. Yeah, Jumpin' Jack Flash.
It's so good.
That's awesome.
I could do a whole Whoopi Goldberg.
All right, but Jumpin' Jack Flash.
So I went.
You got up early.
I did myself. I braided my hair in little all the braids I could. I kept it off with the rubber bands for my braces at the time, since I weren't in braces. I had bought dark toned foundation at the I had lived on a military base, so the base store, from the only black woman I ever saw on the base, who must have been like, "First, why do we even carry this? Because no one here has dark skin. And second, why is this white child buying
Tiny
dark
white child?"
You know what? I'm not even gonna ask any follow-up questions.
Oh,
just let
God.
Her go. So I get on the bus, and nobody else rode that bus route like that early, and it was February, so it was still dark. I get to the school in what I think is the ultimate tribute to my hero, Whoopi Goldberg. And I get 2 feet into the school, and two women whisk me into a bathroom.
And they're like, "Nope."
To both scrub me down and to like explain what blackface is.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, like I've seen that, but I thought it was like a shitty clown, like a harlequin, like a weird, like it doesn't look like black people." So
no.
I never connected the two.
Right.
And I was like, "Oh man, that's in Shirley Temple movies. That's
right.
in like
Holiday Inn."
Right. There's a million things with that.
Right.
I'm like, why are people such fucking assholes? So it was kind of the moment that I realized that the
right.
world is that messed up.
Right.
But
and
I was also
who are these
terrible.
Two? These are two decent human
yeah,
beings
just,
who grabbed you.
Right. In like just
teachers
the deep
or?
South. Yeah. Just some teachers who were like, "Oh honey,
no,
is not the compliment
that you think it is."
Right, exactly. Like, you feel, we know you love her.
Right.
And I was like,
you're
crying
trying to connect.
I was like, "But I love Whoopi Goldberg and I would never want to hurt her feelings." And then like a year or two later, she did that thing where she had her birthday at the Friars Club
and
they had the
Ted.
Roast and she had her boyfriend Ted Danson and
he came out
in blackface. And people's reactions were very clear that it was not okay. And that
right.
was like 89 or 90. People knew, like, that's not all right
like,
anymore.
Oh, and here's this reveal.
Right, exactly. And I was like, and what
I
made me feel a little
that.
Better was, like, of course, Whoopi, who's sometimes got her own brand of problematic, was like, "Ah, come on." She was like, "He didn't mean it that way. Like, it's a joke." And I was like, "Well, everybody else is furious, but at least Whoopi Goldberg would have laughed at my dumb ass."
She might have. She might have. And she would have been like, "Aw, that's sweet that you like me. And go scrub your
right,
face."
Right. Go take care of business. I had done everything, like the hands and everything. So I was like all day, like so ashamed. I was ashamed for years, but like I was
right.
so spent. They let me but keep the braids, but believe it or not, that's not a full transformation. I don't know if you're looking at me right now. This is not very
Whoopi?
easy to get to Whoopi.
No, but but I say, wow, what a weird. I mean, that's interesting that the teacher was like, "No, definitely, tribute as much
well,
as you
she
can."
She was thinking you would wear a vest to look like Frederick Douglass. Like she was thinking clothes,
an outfit,
right? Like an outfit, or bring a notebook.
Hopefully,
or
no fucking shackles.
Right,
right.
Oh,
you're just
God.
Like Jesus Christ. And
a lot of people did like inventors and stuff. I remember the year before I had asked to do Whoopi Goldberg for the Black History Month like write up, which wasn't a pageant. And the my teacher at the time had said I couldn't because she uses swear words. And And she was like, well, she's not appropriate. And I was like, she uses swear words? You know, she only raised in my esteem.
Why don't you hand me a book of banned, right? A list of banned books so that I can read them?
So let me check these off.
Okay. You're going to want to talk about Star Trek anytime.
I am. God, we got there's so much. Okay. So, but also the way it ties into everything to me is interesting. They had a week back then when, you remember A&E Evening at the Improv?
Yeah.
Like, right. They had a week where Star Trek people hosted. And so, of course, as a completist, like, I had to watch it. So I got up after everyone went to bed and, like, plugged in, like, my one earbud back in the day to the TV and, like, quietly turned it on so I could listen. And they had William Shatner host one night. LeVar Burton hosted one night. Geordi. Marina Sirtis, who plays Counselor Troi. George Takei, who's Sulu from the old one. And I think Denise Crosby was the fifth one. But on Marina Sirtis'
night... Who's Denise Crosby?
She's Tasha Yar.
Thank you.
She was Tasha
Yar. Okay.
And she... hot Star Trek goss. Last night, she just did a total burn on Rick Berman, the producer, because he was like, oh, I've had this, your communicator badge on my desk for like 30 years. You know, in the last episode that she was in, she just gave it to me, and I've had it here for 30 years. And she responded back like, oh, no, do you not remember? Like, you walked up to me in the last scene I was ever in, which was in the episode Symbiosis, and you unceremoniously yanked it off my chest and said, well, you won't be needing this anymore. And like, whoa. I was like, oh, Denise. Like, she came back fully, and people were like, oh, that's so mean, da-da-da-da-da. And
that's not mean,
like,
of her.
I'll have dinner with him and stuff, but, like, that's, like, let's not pretend
I gave it to
that
him.
I handed it to you as some honorable thing. I was like, good for her. Fight it back.
Wow. That's brutal. She was so great, too.
She was so good. And I was irritated that she chose to leave the show because they weren't doing anything with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, it's the first season. They're not doing anything with anybody. It's an ensemble cast. Of course, they're hitting the big guys first.
Right.
They're going to do Data. They're going to do Riker. They're going to do Picard.
Yep.
And then she ended up getting good storylines because she had left the show. They brought her back in, like, all these different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But the show after the first season started to get it really good. Second season was cool. They let Troi's hair down, so she looked, like, more relaxed.
Oh, right.
Before, she had that, like, weird tight bun, and it always had, like,
so
a real...
So tight.
Like a Nurse Ratched kind of thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
They had the second doctor, Dr. Pulaski, who was, like, kind of, like, they were trying to do, like, a Bones McCoy kind of...
Right.
Like, oh, she's salty, you know?
Oh, right. She was gruff.
Right, and they just made it so, like, oh, she doesn't know how to pronounce Data's name, and he corrects her, and then she doesn't care. I was like, no, that's not gruff. That's an asshole.
Like, she's right, that's no effort.
Right,
is what just happened there.
Yeah, Dr. Pulaski will misgender you. There's definitely a lot that could go on. But let me see what else. I dressed up as Worf for Halloween in 1992, but nobody saw that because nobody lived on base. So I walked to two houses and went home. But I made my own forehead.
You did the forehead?
Yeah, I was very
but again no blackface.
It's
pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, he's a Klingon, but yes, it still would have counted. I had some foundation left over from but it was...
Are you Rachel Dalziel? What just happened?
So
here?
Close.
So close.
No, that was before the other thing, but I should have not said any of that. All right, cool.
No worries. Here's the thing, is we've all made mistakes, and everyone needs
and
to know that they're never fucking
mine
alone.
Before 1990. Nothing since then.
And you were in your early early
like 12
days.
And 13.
Right, you weren't 24 years old and in medical school.
Yeah, and all of these were made with a great sense of love, not a sense of mockery.
Right.
Believe it or not, showing up like in minstrel face at your stupid medical guy party is
It's not an homage to anything.
I am currently in stupid Twitter fights with a bunch of idiots who are like, oh, but we didn't know back then. I was like, no,
everyone
knew. Definitely knew.
Everyone knew.
Not have been dragged into a bathroom had we not known. Like,
right.
Those women, everybody knew. Like,
everyone knew, in Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, exactly. The old Dominion knew.
Yeah.
Like, I live in Colonial Williamsburg. If Colonial Williamsburg has gotten the message,
memo?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Right. Everyone knows that.
So I babysat to make money, and I bought a lot of Star Trek stuff back then. I got all the novellas, you know,
did you
all
get
the novels.
Oh, I always wanted a phaser, I wanted a communicator, and I wanted
the little communicator chirpy thing. Yeah,
right. There was one that just made the noise, and I was like, why isn't it also a walkie-talkie? I don't understand.
They should just make a cell phone out of it now, because I would totally do it.
The flip phones were so close. Oh, yeah. Some of them kind of looked like them.
They looked, and the one I had, it's the only reason I even caved on eventually getting a cell phone, and I did it really late. And it was only because, it does look a little quirky, you know, like I was into it. And I was really sad when I had to, like, stop using that.
Right. It's,
The information display on their computers is called LCARS, and there's an LCARS skin that you can get for your iPhone, your iPad, or whatever that makes it look like you're using the stuff on Star Trek.
Oh, right, right.
Which I'm very interested
in. I had a Star Trek case on the back of my, I think it was the iPhone 5, might be the 4, and it was looked real nice. Look real nice. I put
looks
it down.
Good, right?
Look like
real classy.
Yeah, real classy. Anyway.
No, I did. I bought they started making the good toys. Then Gloob came out with that. They had the toy tricorder, and I was it lit up and it made beepy noises.
That's the thing about the Zoom. The Zoom looks like a tricorder a little bit, which is what I'm recording this podcast. Hi, and by the way, I'm talking to Kat Burdick, and you can go to @KatBurdick on Instagram or at Dr. Kat Burdick DR on Twitter, and it's katburdick.com. So there you go, just so you know.
Where sometimes I do manage to keep one thought in my head for almost 3 minutes, so that's gonna be fun because I'm not doing it here. I'm just so excited about Star Trek. And let me cross out a couple of these things I've talked about, because I made notes, because I am that kind of nerd.
And then you feel like you've accomplished something.
Right, exactly.
My ad. I'm about to do an ad. Rangers, are you getting married? Because this is an ad for Zola. Zola is the wedding company that will do anything for love. It's reinventing the wedding planning and registry experience to make the happiest moment in a couple's lives even happier. From engagement to wedding to decorating your first home, Zola is there, combining compassionate customer service with modern tools and technology. Zola.com, you create your wedding website, and it conveniently manages everything online and in one place, saving so much time for people that are coming to visit, right? You start with a free wedding website. There's 100 beautiful wedding website designs to choose from. They make it easier to personalize your favorite design. You add photos and stories of how you met, travel and accommodations info, which is my favorite part, and they even recommend things to do for your guests when they're in town for your wedding. You put your Zola registry on your wedding website, so guests get all the details they need and buy your wedding gift in one convenient place. It has a wide selection of gifts at all different price points, of course. So to start your free wedding website and also get $50 off your registry on Zola, go to Zola.com, Zola.com/dork, and get $50 off your registry. Anyway, let's get back into the show. What's your favorite thing about Star Trek The Next Generation?
Oh, man. I'm really into the ships. I love the ships and the technology and the idea of a contained world that the ship is almost an organism. It's keeping you alive,
right?
In almost a mother kind of way.
Okay,
it's got life support systems.
Yep.
The idea of a navigation system, you go where you want to go. The idea of a warp drive. I was very into the warp drive. Built a lot of models trying to make it look like a warp drive.
I don't even understand. If you're warping, you're going faster than the speed of light.
Yeah, you're warping the space around you to pass through it in a different way.
Okay. So what is the class of ship that we are in?
It's a galaxy class.
Okay.
Or at least the ship they're in Star Trek Next Generation is the 1701D. So it's the fifth iteration, because it was 1701, and then the A, the B, the C, and the D.
Okay.
And Kirk and company blew up most of the first ones, right?
Right.
So they get to the D. Yeah. When they start out the show, it's brand new. It's spectacular. It's the flagship of the fleet. It's the best and the brightest. And I think there's one other ship or two other ships that are essentially just like it. And one of them blows up sometime in the first season. They're meet up with it, and then it explodes in front of them, which, makes you nervous.
Right.
We're riding in that ride. I liked that. I liked the idea of a replicator. We kind of have a little bit of that now with a 3D printer. We're getting close.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're getting there. I like I was very into the idea of a bar, 10 forward. You go and there's cool glowing tables and they serve you fancy drinks.
Right.
Kool-Aid with a different color Kool-Aid on top.
Exactly.
Although I've always been irritated, they have synthahol, which is it's alcohol that doesn't make
you drunk.
which I don't really see. Like at that point, just drink apple juice. Like I don't.
Right. Well, right. I think that, that just means that it's they have flavored beverages.
Right.
Is well, what they have.
If you read some of the books, some of it will say, like, describe it as being, well, you do get a buzz.
Oh.
But you can easily dismiss that buzz. And I think the idea is that it's got like a built-in buzzkill thing. Like the instant you have a little adrenaline pump into your system, bang, you're back to like full faculties.
Okay.
I think. I mean, that would be how it works.
Well, I know that the super serum, super soldier serum that Captain America uses, or that Captain America, he cannot get drunk. And maybe, but he doesn't trigger it in any way. So maybe in the future, there'll be a way to just sober up.
Right.
People, you know, because they're constantly like shooting people in the arm.
Right. Hyposprays. They have those now. Those are real now.
Those are real.
Are legitimately real now. The Army really uses those.
For what?
Just to give you like, you know, like instead of sticking you with a needle, it just the pressure gets it through one pore, you know, and it's real small.
Oh, interesting.
And they can give you like an, you know, immunization that way.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Okay. So like sort of normal sort of basic shots.
Yeah.
Can happen. And there's something called Synergene, which I don't think is real. It was in a science fiction novel I read. And I think it's a synthetic energy, like...
Like a protein bar in a shot? Or?
It's more like caffeine in a...
Oh, we have that. We call that meth.
Right. Well, like it wakes... Like if you get knocked out, right. If you're stunned, they give you a shot of Synergene.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden... And it's always in a hypo spray.
I still remember the smelling salts gag used to always see? You don't really see that anymore. But like
not as
snap
much.
It under their nose and somebody gets it.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I
so the tech was the funnest.
The tech is really, I'm into it. I loved all the people. I loved the behind the scenes things, the idea of making a movie. And I think, making a show like that. And Reading Rainbow had done a behind the scenes of Star Trek thing, probably just because LeVar Burton was too busy to do anything else. He's like, just come by my other job. We'll do a quick Reading Rainbow. Get out of my hair, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he had shown how everything worked. And so that was part of, too, like just kind of turning me on to the whole idea of...
What did he show you how it worked?
He showed you how that they put Michael Dorn into a chair and put the Klingon makeup on him and how that works. They showed you that he wasn't really blind. He could snap his visor off, but he can't. He has to act... Ironically, like a blind man who can see when he's a seeing man who's made blind by putting on the visor, and which is, you know, so deep irony.
There was a twist.
There, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you just got to see also like just the little hint that like, which now we know all about, but at the time that Patrick Stewart is really like kind of a fun guy.
Yeah.
You know, when the cameras are not like doing Picard stuff, he's like, hey, how you doing? Let's dance. And then like they turn him on and he's, you know, they're staid and I'm the captain. So, I mean, all of that, the idea of the presentation of something versus what it takes to actually make it behind the scenes, I think that was important. Because I do have that little like, you
have
know,
the
comedian
production.
Asperger thing of just being like, oh, right. Like people say things to you and they may have... had to work that out in advance so that they're not just spewing
thoughts. You were like into the show part of the show too.
All of it. Yeah.
Like there's the world of Star Trek, but you also like the production, like the showbiz part of it.
And like to a ridiculous degree, anything that was involved in Star Trek Next Generation, I would investigate. If it was the production, I want to find out how it was made. I want to know how to make the ship models that they have. I want to know where did the actors go to school? What's their personal history? Like Marina Sirtis, who played Counselor Troy, had been in LA for like, I don't know, 6 months or a year, like looking for jobs.
Yep.
Had been in like a couple, like a Death Wish movie, like a Charles Bronson thing as like a topless girl screaming, you know, the classic girl roles we used to get. And then like was literally like packing to go home and got the call like, you got this job, like you can stay. So like just little things like that, like everybody's little stories of hope and like getting to be big. And I think they also... have that thing of they're one of those casts that legitimately really actually do like each other and act like a family. Where people love to do that when you interview people about a show. They're like, yeah, we're just one big family. And then sometimes it's true and sometimes it's bullshit. But they genuinely seem to really like each other. Patrick Stewart, just as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So I read Shakespeare because he'd mention it on the show.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah, they brought it up in like...
any number 10th of
and
11th, episodes.
Well, yeah. And in like 10th and 11th grade, they had us have a Shakespeare, you know, here, read this, read that. And I would have absolutely not done that reading. But I was like,
without Patrick Stewart.
Captain Picard said, it's cool. So I'm in, right? So I read all of that shit, like in a big way, like got really into it. He did Macbeth, in the like 10 years ago, I think, in New York at BAM. And I got to see it. Like, I sprung for the tickets.
Oh, really?
And it was unbelievable. And then he did it. They did a continuance of it at, like, the Lyric Theater or the Lyric, something like that. And I went, which at the time I was terrified to go to New York. This was before I started comedy. I went and stood outside the door to get him to sign my...
Stage door?
Yeah, the stage door, to get him to sign my complete works of Shakespeare, which he did.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but it took, like, 2 nights, and I was absolutely, like... mortified and embarrassed that I was even doing it. It was ridiculous.
But you got him to do it, which is kind of neat.
And he was super neat. And I went to go
see. And he was really nice about it?
Oh, yeah. He was super sweet. And he did a Times talk, him and Ian McKellen.
Oh, God.
Like a year or two back. And I went to that and asked them about, like, if they particular comedians they like.
Oh, interesting.
Which they were like, oh, a lot of them are, you know, English, you guys won't know them. And I was like, well, you know, like, what, like Billy Connolly, like Scottish. And they were like, oh, yeah, Billy. But Patrick Stewart was like, gave Louis C.K. a big shout out, which at the time was very thrilling to me.
That's very
and
nice
I was
at
like,
the time.
Oh, goddamn.
Right.
But, you know.
What did he mention Stuart Lee at all? Did he mention
no,
Stuart Lee?
No, he didn't bring up Stuart Lee.
Oh, he should have.
Yeah, he should.
Because he's a great guy.
He is good.
Anyway, a really funny guy.
But Trek-wise, I think I do like seeing the technologies that have, like, become real.
Yeah.
I mean, just like cell phones or iPads are very much like what they had. 3D printers are getting close to replicators.
What do they use the replicators for? I forget.
Well, making anything, but mostly when you see it on the show, they're making food.
Right, right.
But
yeah.
They can make ship parts. It's whatever you need. They take the energy and they have it kind of beamed into the shape or whatever.
Right, right. It's a matter creator.
It's a matter.
Because the replicators.
Conversion.
That didn't feel like the food thing. The food thing is just like he'd say Earl Grey.
Right.
Or he'd say. Someone would say, I want a sandwich or whatever.
Right.
And the food would appear. It always felt like a more of a microwave than a replicator.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that when if I use a microwave, like that should just be the process.
Yeah.
I should just say popcorn.
And popcorn.
Then popcorn comes out.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
So I am always like getting cheap little thrills out of if something is Star Trek-y in real life.
Right.
You know, the flip phone was not the only one, but that was definitely in there. I taught myself to sew so I could make a Star Trek costume for Comic-Con.
Okay.
I was terrified of the idea of using this old sewing machine my mother-in-law had given us. It sat in the attic for like 4 years.
Was it the Singer?
It was a 1957 pedal Singer, baby.
The pedal Singer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this one, it has, you press the pedal, but it does have a motor.
Oh, it was electric pedal.
Yeah, but it was from 57, so it was
right.
They just started doing
it. It's a brand new one right there.
Yeah, and so
57.
I nerded out on that one. Like, I looked up the machine to find out where it was made. But it comes with like a little booklet, and it was a little booklet for women to read to learn how to use your sewing machine. And I was like, this is engineering. This is straight up engineering. Like, and then right after that, like, I taught myself to knit, and I was like, this is coding. I got so mad that we have all been told that women are not like suited for these roles. I was like, we're doing fluid dynamics. We're doing active coding. Knitting is just a code that turns into a real life sweater. Like,
no,
that's
I don't
crazy.
Know that. What the
no,
hell are you
true.
Talking about?
Yeah, if you look, I'm just saying. Like, no. There's a lot of nerd stuff in here.
No. But what? How is that coding?
Yeah, because what it does is you do a repeated pattern, and it's giving you instructions like an R1 or a P1. When you look at the write-ups on a knitting pattern.
Yeah.
It looks just like when you're doing code. It's telling you, do this and do this for this many repetitions and then turn it this way.
Okay.
And then do this and then stop that and then use this other material and do this. It's very much like what code looks like.
Okay. And so code does that to do what?
To run a program. Remember, I don't know if you did this back in the day, but like the old floppy disk games, like the old like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay.
You'd be doing like a little role-playing game and you'd put in a question and it would, based on your question, it would give you certain answers back.
Yeah.
That's all coming out of a code that tells it how to respond to certain inputs.
Right. I know that code creates the content and it makes everything, I don't know how to write
code. It creates the content
code.
By saying, that might get in the way of like...
Right. But I also don't know how to knit.
Right.
So,
okay. That's
together, what you're saying is that because I know that binary is a series of zeros and ones.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. So and I learned how to write BASIC back in junior high and in high school.
Yeah.
But it was
knitting is like basic coding. It's not like
It's,
you know, it's if there, it's not if, assembler, it's not like neurons, but it's basic instructions written out in a very simple way.
So that the machine can understand how to do things.
Yeah,
so
if and you're the machine. Code, if you're knitting, you're
right,
the machine.
You're the machine.
Yeah.
So if you're telling the machine how to do something, you're essentially saying, here's the thing I don't understand. Do you know C++ or something? What are you, JavaScript? What are you doing?
Yeah, like I know a little bit of Java. Like I know a little bit, you know, I did basic back in the day. Like I know a little HTML. Like I know enough that I did all my first websites I made myself. Like, so when I started knitting, I was like, wait, why does this feel familiar? Why does this look familiar? And then it just clicked I'm the computer running this program.
And the program code that was written out is the pattern.
Yeah, and the code is the pattern.
Okay. That's fascinating.
So
I'm sorry to have weeded off,
no,
but I just,
right.
I was like, what the hell?
There should be more weeding really during this because I'm focusing so much on just the things that thrilled me about Star Trek The Next Generation rather than it itself.
Which is fine because here's the thing about all dorkdoms is that another episode of Star Trek is about to happen. Like, there's going to be another one. And there's two other that are previous. And everyone loves something different about Star Trek.
Yeah.
Everyone has a different angle on even the same dorkdom, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I guess we can't talk about wrestling because you've already done a wrestling episode. I'm like, I've done 5 wrestling episodes. We've barely mentioned the same people that are the wrestlers.
That's a big world.
It's a big world, as is Star
Trek.
Yeah,
same Trek. And even if you did 5 TNG episodes, you get a lot of different things out of it because people focus on a lot of different parts. But but I remember you had Will Wheaton on and he talked about beer. And I remember just listening, being like, God, I wish you'd talk about Star Trek some more. care about beer, Will. I'm sorry.
I don't care about beer either. But my thing with him is I was like, I think he's talked about Star Trek. I think he's
right.
Good.
He's so right.
I think he's
so
covered
right.
It.
Obviously, that's not. I mean, I don't want to say that's not his dorkdom because he is.
He told
a Star
me he
Trek
wants
geek,
to come back
but,
on and talk about bread.
Oh yeah,
because he stopped drinking and he stopped making beer.
But he carried the yeast over. That's
he carried
smart,
the yeast
right?
over, and now he makes bread.
Oh,
and or what?
That's
I mean,
good.
And that
that's
was
healthier,
a year ago.
Although who knows with carbs? I mean,
who
I should,
knows
I'm
with
not
carbs?
The, I'm not the person to
I'm
say what's healthy.
Though.
What else did I say about Star Trek? Oh, I was raised Catholic. And then, as many do, I came to the age of reason and started breaking from the church because I was like, I really like Jesus. The rest of you bros are not my best.
Right.
And so I kind of formed for myself a combination of Catholicism and Klingon honor code that I lived by for a good 10 plus years.
You took the Klingon honor code, not the Federation.
Yeah. I went straight for Klingon. The idea that like, You fight hard, you keep your word, you defend your friends, you die if it's a good time to die, you die. Because, you know what? And don't, like, wimp out. Just
that,
come in swinging.
That feels so 13 years old.
Doesn't
you're
it?
Just like, yeah.
Let's
yeah.
bring it.
I'm willing to die. And you're like, 13.
Right. You might want to give it a couple of runs.
Right. I'm probably not going to live to be 20, has said every single person who was under the age of 20.
And I think I also liked, because there's an episode where Worf has a child with a woman who is half Klingon.
Oh, that's right.
Right. And then she comes back later. He doesn't know about the kid yet. She comes back later and there's like just a little Worf with her.
Yeah.
You make your conclusions pretty quick.
Yeah.
She gets killed by a bad guy.
Right.
Duras. And Klingon honor code allows him to go and get his vengeance for this. Right. So he without permission beams over to Duras's ship and is just like, what up, bro? And, you know, Duras and all the other Klingons are like, oh, you know, you've been discommodated. Technically, he had kind of been like...
Discommunicated, right?
Yeah, excommunicated from being Klingon, which was bullshit because it was to cover up for Duras' father's crimes. But we'll deal with that another time. But he, you know, another Klingon notices what's happening and he says, oh, he's come to exercise his right of vengeance. And you see everybody just be like, oh, I guess you fucked up, Duras. Like, nobody's going to defend him.
Right.
Worf just basically sticks a giant tuning fork into him, and he's done. The idea of
but it wasn't a
vengeance
duel?
On my enemies was big. Well, I guess it was, but he wasn't, like, Duras wasn't very good at dueling.
Or
so
he didn't know that he was dueling. Right. Did he have a weapon?
He definitely had a weapon because he's a Klingon, and he should have, like, 4 weapons on him at all times. So if he didn't have a weapon, that's on him for not dressing up this morning. But also he was a huge asshole pussy.
Right.
He was a terrible fighter. But Yeah, it's at the time the idea that you're like,
that guy, fuck that guy,
fuck that guy. I still have, you can see a legitimate distaste for this imaginary guy from space. I
am from 34 years ago.
I am still angry about.
Still angry about Dumas.
Yeah, because I liked. Yeah.
You liked his girlfriend.
I liked his girlfriend, Kalar. In fact, I came real close to naming my daughter Kalar. But it's got an apostrophe in it, and it also sounds like a cool black girl name, and I don't want everyone to be disappointed every time she shows up for the rest of her life. Like, oh, we were expecting somebody cool.
And, her. And then all of a sudden, look at the tiny white child.
Right, exactly. And, I did name her something sci-fi. She's Ripley.
But, her name's Ripley? Yeah. Oh, okay. Which, that's pretty badass, though.
Right? I thought that was cool, right? It was like, if you stick to the first couple movies, she can't watch, like, by the fourth one, she's going to be like, what did you name me after? She's terrible.
the first movie.
But I did do some Star Trek baby cosplay when she was little and couldn't get away from me.
Oh, right. Oh, my God.
Because I had tiny wigs.
You had tiny wigs on your own child and have turned them into all of the different characters.
Yeah, because her little like high chair seat, which wasn't a full high chair, it was a short high chair, looked just like the captain's chair. And I was like, wait a second. And then it just got really out of hand, like everything I do.
First of all, this child doesn't look real. This child looks like a doll.
She's a real cutie.
That is a cute child. This is an adorable baby. And how old is this?
Well, now she's two. She was about a year in these pictures. I took them at different ages based on how big the character was.
You put a fake beard on your daughter to make her look like Riker.
When she was asleep, I painted it on.
Oh, my God. And
with tempera, because it's non-toxic.
And then did you glue that hand to her face?
No, she just did so many Riker moves. There's like 12 of these where she's literally like, I don't know if she just had
She's
it
on her chin. She's on her forehead.
My enthusiasm has apparently built it into my DNA. Like, she came very close to flipping a chair around and sitting on it backwards. But
that is a lot. That is so much done to a child. The kid's like two now?
Yeah, she's two. And now she I don't think she would put up with this. But also the idea of like doing the different genders, I was like, oh, well,
it's fine.
My sister would love to have some stuff when she was a little kid that she feels like fits into her ID now. I was like, hey, if my daughter turns out later, she tells me, nope, I'm a guy.
Yeah.
Great. You can put this as your throwback Thursday.
Exactly.
And you don't have to explain anything.
Right. Everyone's just psyched.
Right. Everyone's just
as are you.
I am.
And this is the picture right there of Tiberius.
Right.
Who was our
Kirk.
Right. Well, no, he was named after a Roman general named Tiberius Dracus, Gracchus.
Oh, right.
So his name was Tiberius Dracus. And he just passed away, old age, 23. And he's an iguana. He'd lived for a long time. He was a great iguana, very sweetheart. But Andy would occasionally put a hat on him. And there's a couple pictures of him with a hat on, and he could not have looked less pleased.
This is my iguana, Ishmael.
You have an iguana?
I don't anymore. He lived to be 16.
Oh, nice.
And then he died after a tragic run-in with a terrible vet in New Jersey that I took him to when he had broken his leg.
Ooh.
But he was a really good guy.
Aw.
But that's one of the reasons that I really loved one of your first albums where you're talking about it's like petting a purse. And it's exactly like petting a purse. He was a good guy. He was a great pet.
Yeah.
Right.
He was a sweetheart. And Andy just got that picture from Carmen Morales for his birthday. And because Carmen did some iguana sitting when we were out of town. And so she has a bunch of really great pictures of Tiberius.
That's a good friend because it's hard to find somebody to pet sit your iguana.
Yeah.
People are not into it because they look so terrifying, but they're really chill. Like,
they're super chill.
Yeah.
And she was cool with letting him out and having him wander around. And one time he was out and I could not face for some reason picking him up and putting him back. But I wanted to let him out. Mm-hmm. And so I called Carmen. I was like, take you to lunch if you come over and pick up my iguana and stick him back in his cage. And she's like, oh my God. Yes, of course.
Yes, absolutely. That is worth a and he Chipotle
was,
run.
He was having a sort of a male rage day, so he was a little aggressive. And
they
she was
do.
Like,
they would like notice if you're on your cycle. It sounds weird, but
it was
like
something
they pick
weird.
It up. Like they're
just like, all right, I'm going to bite your pant leg. And I was like, I don't want you to bite. And so he bit Carmen's pant leg, she was like, and I said, I'll try to, maybe I'll spray him with water. And she's like, you're just spraying me with water. What are you doing?
Right. Like, he's not a cat. He's going to be like, oh, I'm wet. Oh, no. My fur. He's like, it's just going to sloth right up.
I was warm anyway. Anyway, it was a weird. Okay.
Okay, I'll talk about one more Trek thing. I went to Star Trek conventions, a number of them, when I was a kid.
I never went to one.
I went. They were a delightfully nerdy treat. Oh, my God. So good.
They were sort of early conventions.
Yeah, and these were fairly early ones because it was You know, it was early 90s and stuff. And I went to one in Virginia Beach, the first one I ever went to. This was another case where, like, nobody could drive yet. So we, like, bribed somebody's parents, took us. And we go, and it's George Takei. Mm-hmm. And he gets up. You know, he's on the stage talking. We got there a little late, so we get there as he's talking. And it's a whole room of these, like, just real nerdy, uptight dudes in the middle of Virginia, right?
Right.
And I walked in, and I was like, what am I feeling right now? I was like, I know what I'm feeling. I'm feeling a room full of a little uptight men realize that this hero of theirs is definitely flaming gay. Because there was no, it was not undercover. Like, oh. George Takei wasn't out, but it was obvious.
Right.
And his boyfriend was there with him. Like, he had, like, it was very clear.
He wasn't hiding anything.
Right, he wasn't hiding anything. It was, like, up to you.
He's like, I am an actor.
Right, exactly.
I played that guy on Star Trek.
That was really interesting, because the first time I ever thought about the idea that, like, you could be so different than the character you played that you have a fully different sexuality.
Yeah.
And also the idea that I was seeing, I was like, oh, I'm seeing all these guys realize that, yeah, you admire a man, and he's gay.
And he's gay.
And it's nothing. That doesn't matter at all.
He's
and you
still
have to
George
let
Takei.
A bunch of, yeah. shit go, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
When I got to meet Walter Koenig for the first time, I was like, holy shit, that's Walter Koenig. And he would not make eye contact. He was very polite about it. It was Danielle Koenig used to stand up. She's a comedy writer
right
now.
Right, right,
and,
right, because his son was on, like, Growing Pains, right? He was, like,
yeah.
an actor, yeah.
Yeah, but Danielle is married to Jimmy Pardo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
And so, but I was at their wedding, and that was the second time that I met him. But the and I saw them not long ago. They go to this diner that I go to over in Burbank, the Magnolia Grill. And so, but the first time I met him, she was, I said, I'm a huge fan of your work. And he did that eye slide of, well, thank you very much. Right. And he was like, is it going to get weird? It isn't. Oh, good. Oh, good. It isn't going to get weird.
It must get so weird for him.
It must be intense.
So off. So often.
Right.
And I always feel like the best way to reward anyone whose work you admire is to leave them the F alone.
Right. Or to be as distantly polite as they would like you to be.
Yeah. Or just say hi on the way out of a show. Right. Like, nothing major.
Right.
Which occasionally I break and feel terrible
about. Right.
Because
hit and miss, but I love Dave Chappelle a great deal.
Yeah.
And I also am exhausted by Dave Chappelle, because he will go for 6 hours. And I'm like, no one wants that. No, that's fine. Because David Cross does it too.
That's like the guys who think, like, banging for 2 hours is something women want. No. We're chafing. At that point. Right,
like, go home. Right. It's unless something is happening that clearly isn't.
Right. If you need to go for a second helping him astroglide, stop.
If I know, if I'm aware that we're 2 hours in, we're not doing it right.
Right.
I should not
time,
be.
Time flies when you're having fun. Not slogs like crazy.
But so in passing is good. Anyway, so some favorites. Let's do it.
Oh, just like favorite episodes?
Yeah.
I'm a real sucker for the Riker Troy episodes, again, because I was coming of age during
right.
like, ooh, girls bow, and boys.
Bow, bow.
So and because I'm also obsessed with LeVar Burton, there's an episode that he directed called Second Chances, which is where the classic soap opera, what? There's an evil twin, not really an evil twin, but there's a duplicate of Commander Riker that was, like, accidentally created in a transporter accident. So accidentally they just left this dipshit Lieutenant Riker on a planet to just, like, kill time for, like, 7 years until they come back to, there's this open window in
the
atmosphere.
How do I not remember that?
Oh, yeah. And so, like, they find him, like, Riker finds him and is like, what the hell? You know, they beam him up, the doctor mm-hmm. checks him, and Jonathan Frakes did a great job of acting like, oh, I've never seen this lady before in my life. Hey, nice to meet you, Doc. You know, he did a good job of acting like this more kind of immature version of himself who hasn't seen any people in 7 years.
Right.
And so his, you know, ex-girlfriend who's on the crew is like, oh, I'll go talk to him. And you just see, like, the real, like, air quotes, real Riker, like the main Riker be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, that's not good. Like,
yeah.
And the redheaded doctor and Counselor Troy are, like, best friends, right? So they have like little girl clashes sometimes. They have like little scenes where they're like, oh, we're doing aerobics and talking. Like,
yeah.
So they did one of those where it's like they're doing, this time it's Tai Chi because it's been a few years and they don't have any more spandex left, right? So they're doing like Tai Chi and talking and she's like, you should definitely bang him. And she's like, you, I knew you would say I should bang him. She's like, you should. And he shows up and she's like,
wrong.
I'm leaving. See you guys later. Wink, wink. And like locks the door. So it's like super classy. And then she does. The implication is that she bangs him. It was the 90s. They never, like, now they just show people fucking.
Right.
Back then, if you liked two characters and you wanted to have them bang, you were needing to write some fanfic. You have to imagine it yourself.
Right.
Like, there was an implication.
There was a lot of closed doors.
Right. There's a lot of, like, bodies move towards each other and it's the commercial.
Yeah.
Which was upsetting, especially during the X-Files. But the, So then the next scene opens where she's like clearly finished off with him and he's asleep. And she's like, I'm going to go get a snack and tend forward, right? Like, I'll go in there, get a sandwich. She comes in, original Riker standing there, just pouting, just staring out the window, full pout. Like, this guy hasn't banged half the universe.
Right.
On his way to this, like, this thing where he's like, you know, I can't believe you're banging me, you know, like, but it's not me. And so, yeah, his feelings are very hurt. And I love that scene. And they did. Like, LeVar Burton did such a great job of framing it and showing the characters in, like, this had been done, like, maybe 100-plus times by this time that he did this episode, and he was finding ways in his first directorial debut to make it look a little bit new again or show off somebody. Like, he did such a great job with Marina Sirtis, like, letting her have a real scene and have some meat to it. She did an amazing job with it. She does a great job of looking like she's really hurt when she would be hurt. And looking like she's like, fuck it, I'm just going to let myself do this once. Right. Like, thing. And
because
and
the characters were relatively, they weren't allowed to be much more than two-dimensional.
Yeah.
Because everyone was super precious about the Star Trek, you know, the fact that they were the next, the generation. They're like, don't break it. Right? Don't break it.
And you notice that because everybody has like a dead family. Like, they barely have any family alive. Like, Worf has his foster parents.
Yep.
And his brother, who they don't meet for, like, 7 years and never gets mentioned. Right?
Yep.
And it's insane. Beverly's whole family is essentially dead except her grandma, who's banging that candle ghost. We'll find out about later. If you're not familiar with the show, check that out. Troy's dad is dead, and her little sister that she didn't even know about is dead, but her crazy mom shows up.
Her crazy mom shows up.
To hump the captain, which is always fun.
Always good time.
Most of the people I know don't like Counselor Troy's mom and her episodes.
Oh, I kind
of
love her.
I love her because at the time there wasn't a lot of that. And the only reason they let somebody come on and dominate the show in that way is because she was married to Gene Roddenberry.
Right.
And it was clear that that was the case.
Yeah.
But she made a meal of it. She did the real anti-MAME. Like,
she had a beautiful, she was having the time of her life.
Yeah.
And even I could tell, I was like, oh, she's a nightmare.
Right.
But she's kind of great.
She's fun, right?
Yeah.
And that was back when women weren't as much allowed to be nightmares. I mean, she was bringing 50-year-old cleavage and highlighting it and having it center stage. I was like, this is goals, right? Like, I didn't know what hashtag goals was yet, but that was it, right?
Nice sternum. Nice sternum, lady.
Right? Nice rack. And just things like that. Like, I did like all the for the most part, the Counselor Troy mom episodes. I liked... sometimes when they do like a specifically science fictiony thing where they did the ship looping again and again through time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the end, it turns out they got into a ship crash with Kelsey Grammer. Like, Frasier shows up and is like, what's up? And he thinks he's from like original Star Trek time. So been caught in this time loop forever. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like what they did with the last episode, which is always for every show. It's really hard to nail a last ep.
Yeah.
Last eps are so hard.
Can't
to
remember
get good.
What it was.
Oh shit, how am I forgetting the last one? That's a goddamn shame. that's amazing. But it's a show where they had to go to their first mission. They had to go like kind of halfway through the show where they are now. And then they had to go into the future. And it was Q.
It was
always dragging everybody.
I was going to say it has to be a Q episode.
It's got to be Q, right? And they
Q was so great.
He was great. And what a great actor. He was in like everything in the 90s. He'd be in L.A. Law. He'd show up. And I would watch any episode of anything that he was in. So it would get me onto other shows because part of the Star Trek nerdery was to be like, oh, John DeLancey's on it. Guess I'm watching that episode. Ooh, L.A. Law is pretty good. You know?
Yeah.
Let's see. There was one other dumb thing I wanted to talk about before we were done. What is it? What is it? Sorry about that. Oh, that's Star Trek is how I met one of my best friends ever.
Yeah.
Because we were both in a science class at the beginning of college, and they were introducing to us the Heisenberg principle.
Okay.
And they said, the professor said, and that's why the transporters on Star Trek wouldn't really work in real life. And we both sat up on opposite sides of the room and yelled the phrase simultaneously, but that's why they have the Heisenberg compensators, which is a specific part of the transporter that you only know about if you're a huge nerd. And we like locked eyes. And then she was my bridesmaid like 10 years later. So it's just
Kat Burdick, we're going to end on that because we're at an hour. This has been fascinating. I love this angle of Star Trek The Next Generation dorkdom. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you so much for having
everybody,
me.
It's at Dr. Kat Burdick on Twitter. It's just Kat Burdick with a K, K-A-T-B-U-R-D-I-C-K on Instagram, katburdick.com to find all of those things that you haven't found and follow her to find out where she's doing stand-up comedy. Thank you for doing the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?